is this House believes AI undermines our humanity, and I'm really hoping to not hear any speeches that end in, and this whole speech was written by ChatGPT. Before we get into the order of business, we will move on to council announcements, so can all council members please stand up and introduce yourselves and say any of your announcements as well. So, who wants to start? Stand, please.
So I'm in charge of tea and biscuits. I'm also in charge of the minutes, which means I get to completely misrepresent what every one of you say and ensure that I will probably be privy to several libel cases by the end of the year. I don't want to do this, but I've been forced to do it against my will.
Who's next?
I'm Daniel, I'm the treasurer and the technology officer. So not only will I be trying to look you for a file on the way in, if you want any of your photos or videos from debates or whatever else this year, just send me a message. But yeah, membership for the full year is $5, which is relatively cheap given we outperform basically every other society spending money on members, with buses to Dublin and all that kind of thing. So please do pay it and help contribute to society. But as a kind of sort of change of policy this year, if you're a HLM, or a life member, which comes out at the end of every session, there won't be a charge. We're waiving the charge for HLMs this year, and you'll be automatically enrolled into the
Next is internal.
My name is Rory, I'm the internal convener. If you'd like to speak on any debates, just message me on Facebook or Instagram page, obviously.
Any conflict of interest if there are another members of the council?
No.
That is my little brother for anyone who's wondering. External? External?
Hello, this feels like an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm not an alcoholic, but I am the extra convener. My role mainly is to make them outside of these meetings. The most pressing thing that I need to speak to all about is regarding the Irish High and State competition, which is the...
Yes.
No, maybe not James, but one of the premier debate competitions on this island, and we're hoping to get as many people looking to take part, and there may or may not be a trial at some point soon, perhaps. No, unfortunately, cannot offer trial by combat, but trial by debate, which is almost worse. So please, do not fear to please get involved and to contact the society, and I'll be in touch regarding that. Thank you.
Schools convener.
I'm Tom. I am schools convener. So I basically really have been in the job because it wasn't really involved in a lot of you. I talk about next schools competitions and workshops in the different schools across the north to try and sort of keep sending debate and make them really better or even debaters and then over here and the next year. So some of you might have been involved in schools competitions or whatever it's called. If you have people like me to thank for your work.
Thanks.
Hi everyone, I'm Rob Warren, this year's events officer. I was just in charge of organising different programme events that we have outside the normal scope of our debates. So this year, I don't know if any of you have seen, but we have a live podcast recording with here in Portland, and it's a podcast, the No Glasses, live in the hall, then upcoming this Sunday, the 1st of October. We're joined by tickets to come and support us, it will be a very good night. Also, I am in charge of organising our annual Stolen Mixer, where we will have politicians from across these islands who come and will debate on a motion of the day. This has believed the UK is ready for a Labour government, and they will participate alongside some of our student speakers. So it's a great opportunity for all of you, basically, to get involved and speak in a high-profile venue and alongside high-profile public speakers. And then we will have a Lit-Talk lecture series, which is where we have different public figures come and they will present themselves, they'll give a talk, and then we'll be Q&A after, and it gives really an opportunity to engage with high-profile public figures, where currently we have one with Jeffrey Johnson, available for cancelled for Wednesday, 18th of October, and we're working on one regarding Michelle O'Neill for November. So I hope you all get a lot out of those events. I'm really looking forward to working with the council and everyone this year.
Sam.
Jeffrey.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jack. I'm this year's training officer. I'm personally going to have to come to if you're at all interested in the day. If you, after the night, are interested in taking part in any of this semester or even next semester, you might be afraid of public speaking. You might not know how confident you need to be or what topics you need to discuss. Come to me or any member of council and we'll start training workshops. We'll give you tips, tricks, or just advice in general on how to excel in the working this year. And we're starting workshops hopefully next week or the week after.
And last but not least?
Yes, I'm Sam, I'm a social officer. My job pretty much entails getting you on to the pub. Meant to be your welcoming, friendly face, because sadly, that's not going to happen. I also started organising an annual formal, which takes place in sort of February, March time, and organising pub crawls, karaoke, that sort of.
And where are we all going after this, I wonder?
Woodworkers, where we've tried to negotiate this thing, we'll just see how it goes, but yes, we'll all go to Labrys afterwards.
Okay, brilliant. And now I'd like to invite our secretary, James Orchin, up to read the minutes.
Shut up. I should also do preface my remarks here and say that I wasn't here at the last debate because I was actually at a all-expenses-paid dinner with a visiting academic, paid for by the HAP office. It was very nice. It was at Dean's. You know, okay, not so great. But anyways, I got to have an actual dinner as opposed to having to spend time with the rest of you. So that was a win-win for me, I have to be honest. So on the 27th of April 2023, in case you don't know the year, the Literific convened for the 24th ordinary meeting of the 174th session for the motion, this house would rather live, laugh, love, in the... Oh, for those of you who aren't laughing, you live in a better world than the rest of us. Met for the motion, this house would not fight for king and country. As usual. The meeting began with announcement. President Tosham McSparren introduced the council of the 175th session. Then presented Ryan Hoey HLM with a bottle of port as a leaving gift. Leaving gift. Tom Burns encouraged members to participate in the New York Irish Centre online conference. Spoiler, it's been and gone, I'm afraid. If you're interested, I'm sorry, you have to wait till next year. And Dermot Hamill HLM asked members to express their interest in competitions for the following academic year. Whatever happened to that Dermot? Anyways, following a reading of the minutes, the meeting moved to private members' business. So, Joy, Dermot Hamill, HLM, raised the Northern Ireland budget, and this is so dated, presented to Parliament by the Secretary of State in the absence of an executive. This isn't out of date. Responses were heard from Ryan Hoey, HLM, President Emeritus Daniel McCormick, HLM. There were also a separate piece of private members' business on Michelle O'Neill attending the coronation of His Majesty the King. Again, this is quite dated. After President's questions, the vote of prior opinion was held. There were 17 votes for aye, 4 votes for nay, 3 abstentions. The proposition by a slight margin had it. First in the proposition was Rory McSparren, may God have mercy on us all. He started with a quote-unquote weird tangent about whether or not meth makes you bulletproof. This is somebody who, if you know the cafe at the library, yesterday, threatened to give me botulism. Come at me. Anyways, then he went on to explain the human cost of war. Wow. Arguing that the proposition wants you to explode. Rory noted also the economic cost of war. Really brave points here, as money has to be diverted away towards other priorities, such as health and education. God forbid we spend money on the NHS. Well, he continued by saying that war ruins communities. Really, really pushing the boat out here, Rory. Can destroy cultures again and involves many atrocities being committed. First in the opposition was Daniel Toft, HLM. He began by noting that when the Literific previously debated the motion in 1933, it was defeated. He argued that the phrase king and country represented more than just an allegiance to a political entity or a particular monarch. He also made the case for our democracy, the rule of law, freedom of speech, depending on those willing to fight for our values. Second on the proposition was Dermot Hamill, FLM. He argued that the proposition had misrepresented the motion, saying that the word king cannot be divorced from the motion, because it's in the motion, dummy, saying that the word king cannot be removed from the motion to make it more acceptable. That's just been repeated twice. Dermot argued that we should not fight for some jingoistic notion of following a leader or fighting for our country. You want us to fight for multinational corporations? Do you have your McNukes present? Anyway, he concluded with some, and I quote, liberal gobbledygook, a phrase that I would like to use a lot, about peace and love and other pacifistic nonsense. Again, I didn't write this, but I agree with the sentiments 100%. Second in the opposition was Luke Maguire. In a change of tone... See, control F... God, yeah, that's mentioned. In a change of tone, he said that there was only one thing on his mind when thinking about the motion. War, really. Really profound, that. He argued that war is only one goal, the complete destruction of your opponent. With love of your country and your sovereign, you can become the greatest fighting force in the world. He concluded by arguing that we must be sophisticated savages to deter aggressors from that. God is on the opposite. What does that even mean? We must be sophisticated savages to deter aggressors, that God is on our opposition side. Evidently, this wasn't written by Tulsa because this person doesn't know how to speak English. Anyways, the final speaker in the proposition was President Emeritus Daniel McCormick, HLM. We're giving these out to everybody, aren't they? He started by pointing out the contradictions on the opposition's argument. Mr. Toft arguing that, what did it write? Mr. Toft arguing that we should fight for our democratic values. Again, and Mr. Maguire arguing that we should fight for an unelected monarch. He clarified that the proposition was not saying that there are no circumstances in which you should fight, rather that you should fight when there is a clear threat. Final speaker for the opposition was Ryan Hoey, HLM, who apparently has already left but has come back in the course of a debate here. He presented five reasons to fight for king and country: duty, freedom, national security, patriotism, and historical precedent. He argued, responded to McCormick by saying that sovereignty, who provides us with freedom, before going on to defend the Iraq War, this is university, Ryan, you know, and says that the king gets his speech and right from the rule of God. I agree with you wholeheartedly there. He ended by quoting Winston Churchill's blood, toil, tears, sweat speech. I don't think that's how you do it. Questions were heard from Jack Sands, Jacqueline Bonner, Noah Barnley, Christopher Lynch, and Terence Pringer, Metcalf, Esquire. Following the debate and questions from the House, the vote on speakerability took place. There were 21 votes for the proposition, 7 votes for the opposition, and 2 votes for the abstentions. Thus, the proposition had it. May I take the minutes as read?
And now we move on to private members' business, where you can just discuss anything that you've seen in the news this week or you're just interested in. So does anyone have a piece of private members' business? And I look at Ryan.
So yesterday, I don't know if everyone saw, Rishi Sunak announced a change to net zero targets and is pushing back the date at which we will ban petrol and diesel cars and force everyone to rip out the boilers and put in heat pumps from 2030 to 2035, and then also said a bunch of stuff around we're not going to tax meat or tax flights or make us have 7 bins in our house and stuff like that, which everyone then mocked him for. But actually, there was a piece of legislation in 2021 that did start to require you to have 7 different types of recycling bins. But anyway, what does the House make of this change?
Anyone? Oh, I'll go to the person in the grey letter first. Could you state your name for the minutes?
I'm Keir. Keir Robinson. So I think that this is just this is Rishi Sunak's way of avoiding the fact that the Tories have no climate change policies, and instead of just flat out admitting this, which would cause them to lose major amounts of support, they're trying to hide it by saying no, we have to do this later, even though this is a situation that we have to handle right now. We are running out of time. Like the UN, I think it was the UN. Yes, they said that we're no longer in the stage of global warming, we're in the stage of global boiling. We can't be pushing dates back. We need to be working as fast as possible. And the Tories, they don't have any stake or interest in actually providing climate change policies. They're only interested in just like, well, they have no interest in doing anything about this. So by pushing dates back, they're avoiding the problem while trying to give the face of caring about the environment when they couldn't care about it at all.
Can I go to Dermot?
Come on, catch your head. Sorry, Mike. I've been shot hard on the defend the Tories.
What? Is that what you shot?
No. I think that while this is really weirdly worded, and I really hope that our current English comrades don't have to deal with seven pins, I think at the end of the day, it's largely about taking the burden of tax off of ordinary people. It's going to hopefully help alleviate the very high cost of living. I mean, we're going to Lavery's afterwards, and it's about £6 a pint. So, if I can, you know, still burn some coal and get cheaper pints, then I don't care about the environment.
I'll go to you first and then back to you.
I was just going to say that like, I think people need to remember that like, a lot of poor people have older cars, and for us to move to electric cars so quickly is a bit ridiculous. And like, I ain't buying an electric car anytime soon, I can afford one. That's all I need, so it's still far cheaper like cars to run. And I think it's just a bit like unfair to try and expect everybody to make changes in that way whenever they don't expect to get incentives.
So starting with your point about trying to give tax cuts to ordinary people so they can rely more on oil and gas, and you mentioned the cost of living crisis. Part of that crisis is because of oil and gas. We're not trading with Russia, and if we invested more in renewables, we wouldn't actually be in as bad of a situation because, one, we'd have less CO2 emissions, and two, people like the UK would rely more on itself for energy. It wouldn't be relying on other countries that, when we stop trading with, it affects poorer people. And on your point about electric cars, I think that is a good point. We can't just switch to electric cars. Electric cars are far too expensive, and also they're not actually environmentally friendly. They use lithium-ion batteries, and those aren't recyclable. So while they don't produce CO2 emissions, they do have more long-term impacts than other alternatives. And I think we should be focusing more on like public transport, etc.
I'll go take these last 3 points. So Megan, then Grant, then Dermot.
Just a wee thing here that struck me as interesting about not being able to afford electric cars, and I know that they are very expensive, but maybe we would get a little bit farther if Rishi Sunak and everybody else that ran the UK would pay us a living minimum wage. That could help. And then also, I think Rishi has also realised that the Eras tour is coming up and Taylor Swift's going to need to bring her private jet over here. We need to be able to have access. She needs to be able to have access to that private jet to get over here. He's very excited for that.
Good point.
just on the point of because there's been a lot of questions coming up. I'm no natural family motorist. I don't drive. I was one of those people who lived 15 minutes from my school and walked every day and kind of frankly laughed at people who lived even closer than me who got dropped off by their parents on the morning school. But anyway. I do think that the climate decision making is overly simplified and not difficult. I think on one side you have the climate lobby, who oversimplified the questions of, okay, this is what this science says, quote X, Y, or Z, and say, this is a catastrophe. We're going, unless we do something before X date, it's all over. On the other side, you have people who are friendly climate change skeptics who don't look as much as people are having the views, that doesn't really contribute anything useful to the discourse. So I do think that decision making, governments need to be honest, because it involves a series of trade-offs, economically, socially, not social, economic upheaval, and I think the government has made a wise decision politically to be clearer on the trade-offs that are involved, because I think whenever governments sign up to the Paris Climate Accord and when governments put in legislation to have net zero by 2050, they weren't really clear about the trade-offs involved. So I think that's gone a long way to clarify that this isn't attainable by 2030, because let's face it, everything will still be, the majority, I would say, of the motor market will still be petrol-based cars by 2030, at least the late 2020.
Dermot, and then we can take a new piece of private members' business.
On the point about investing in renewable energy, yes, listen, great. I think we should invest in renewable energy. Who doesn't? Because if it means that we've got less pollution, great. If it makes things cleaner, great. But that's a long-term solution. And cost of living crisis isn't just going to be solved by firing in long-term solutions. This is short-term economic work to make things easier for people. So yeah, great, let's invest in renewables, but we need to be realistic about the fact that people can't afford the current situation, and if we can find ourselves in a position where we can cut certain taxes, then great, let's do that, because the cost of living really matters to people more day to day than how they get their energy, as long as they can afford it.
Are there any new pieces of private members' business? Yeah.
One of the last thoughts on that was the Kenyan government's proposition in the African Union.
Could you state your name for the minutes, please?
Hong Kong. Yeah, one of the last thoughts on the Kenyan government's proposition for environmental tax to deal with climate change for international communities, for all nations to pay into, as the damages from climate change tend to affect poor countries the most.
Anyone on this? Jacqueline?
I think pretty much every single African country has the right to not want to be penalized for this, seeing as they make up such a tiny percentage of the overall contribution to the problem, and struggling to recover your economy from like some centuries of colonization. You don't need first world countries telling you to start taxing the things that are helping you get your country back on the track.
Anyone else on this? I'll go you and then you. Please state your name for the minutes.
Jonathan Yolanda, the password to fire this well. The ER. Something regarding African nations and other less developed countries around the world, perhaps better ways for Western countries if we're entering, rather than talking them, is to give them the necessary technological resources and training to implement exterior solutions to the problems such as nuclear energy and
I was going to mention that both of them I like. It's going to be how these countries industrialise, it's really going to make the difference to climate change. And if they do it sort of the way that Britain did, with a lot of coal and a lot of, you know, smoke and smog, it's going to be much worse. And if everybody in Africa is going to end up going to be harm, maybe someday, you know, they're not going to be electrical where they are now, of the sort.
Anyone else on this? We can take one more piece of private members' business.
Similar frame to the last few points of private members' business, I have a clinical screen. What is green? Which it wasn't before. It's obviously not great for us. Everyone wants to drink the water and whatever else. I don't want to rush ourselves on that. And maybe we're correctly as well at the point that Loch Ness itself, the Ben Banks of Loch Ness, are owned by, I think, 12th Earl of Shaftesbury or somewhere. So the entire sort of bank of the largest freshwater and the largest water sites in Ireland, and I think which drinking water about 750,000 people here, is owned by some fellow in a big house living off himself in wherever Shaftesbury is. Well, what are the effects of that on us, particularly, and on the American program?
Sam?
Well, I think it's a very serious problem, you know, it's such times as Norwich, which time that Jim Bridge is close to the lake, and I mean, literally goes with me. And I think that every effort should be made to preserve two bridges.
I think at this point, Jesus. Well, Jesus, we can all now walk in the water without giving up to so much arguing. I was listening to, I believe he's the right honourable, but please don't be correcting me if I'm wrong, Edmund Poots MLA, discuss this issue. He claims that there are limits on when farmers spread their slurry and their silage, trying to limit the effects of eutrophication. But evidently something's gone terribly wrong if we've got a lovely green smudge of a lake, to the point now that we actually perhaps need to set very harsh penalties and determine the base on what we feed our cattle actually can be produced slurry or not, and hence remove this nutrification by the fact that there simply isn't enough liquidy waste
Hi, how are you saying?
I'll take Dermot and then Max, and then that's the end of private members.
It is important to point out that the very attractive Edward Boots is a farmer, so I think that he is going to be slightly opposed to much in terms of the environmental stuff on Slurry. So I will point out though that Belfast water out of tap tastes like coins. I think that comparing to parts of the country where they don't get their water from Loughnane, it is much nicer, like in Londonderry. So perhaps either this is a statement from Loughnane that they don't want to be drank, perhaps Loughnane has converted to Irish republicanism.
Or
we've lost
with Loughnane.
I simply wish to say that the tap water in Belfast builds character. So I wish to reiterate the point on that it would be an absolute cultural catastrophe to lose Lurgan. I mean, what else are we going to make jokes about? And what about what could be next? It could be Lurgan. It could be the bustling metropolis of Bangor. Like, we need to sort this issue out further before it destroys our cultural heritage site.
I just like to make one point on what Max, your other one can describe the water in Dublin as being poisonous.
I wish to
include tapeworm in it. Is this true?
Yes, for those unaware, despite the accent of Mike for you, I lived in Dublin for ages, and I had to historically second my brother's opinions of the tap water, and it's not right. That bad.
It's sages. Why?
It's sort of neutral.
Okay. This isn't really private members' business anymore. You can discuss. You can discuss this in Lavery's afterwards, I'm sure. But now we move on to President's Questions, where you have 5 minutes to ask me anything you want, within reason. I'll go to Dermot first. Can I ask, is there anyone French here tonight? Okay, then I condemn the French, because there's no one. I don't have any political opinions. I'm completely politically neutral on everything, I'm afraid. Jacqueline.
I can't write this half, please slow down.
Okay, I'm really slow.
May the office of port bearing be explained to the speakers?
Oh, yes. So when I get onto the rules, you'll all see some more about it. But if you swear during a debate, and I'm talking about the people who are sitting at this table, I have the right by our constitution to fine you a bottle of port, which will be presented at the next ordinary meeting, and Jacqueline is going to act as our port police, and she will chase you up if you don't bring the port. So please do bring the port. It is not all for me. It is for everyone. It is not just for me. Anyway. Any other?
I'm expiring.
Is it privilege?
Yeah.
Is it enacted right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Anyone else?
Madam President, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Shut up!
I had gruel and escargot. I'm just going to say straight up lies every week until you stop. Any other questions?
Madam President, I say.
Very good. James?
Yeah, this is my resume yesterday. Again, when your younger brother threatened to give me a Victorian disease, I asked for your permission to smash him. Can you please reiterate before the House and for the Lord Almighty? What was your response?
I think I said you could.
You said twice.
Did I? Yeah. Okay, well, then, yeah, afterwards in Lavery's, you can smack him. Once again. Any other questions? Roshi.
There's a lot of, you know, good student associations
created
the student union this year.
Oh, is this the women's chairperson? Wait, actually, we have our tradition. It's Madame Chairperson. Feminism. Yeah, I'll definitely be joining.
So recently, Madam President, we found the creation of the new Northern Irish political party, the Northern Irish Libertarian Party.
Oh, no!
the dear libertarians in their fight for liberty in Northern Ireland.
Did you not hear what I said about not having political opinions?
It's not just like,
but no. I didn't even know that was a thing. Any other questions?
The khaki bottom.
What's your favourite country in the Balkans?
Oh, this one's really...
Serbia?
Why would you tell me to say that? I couldn't think. Oh god, well, I take that back completely. I'm going to take one more question before anything goes on.
Madam President, given your previous comments about your favourite Balkan nation,
no.
What are your opinions about the Srebrenica massacre?
Stop! And with that, we move on to our vote of prior opinion. So, if you believe that this house, that AI, if you believe that AI does undermine our humanity, please put up your hand now. Yeah, I got first. Yeah. And if you don't believe that AI, the AI undermines our humanity, please put up your hand now. I got 18. And if you would like to abstain on the motion, please put up your hand on. I got 8. So could you please read out the vote on prior opinion? 8?
On the motion at hand, but I don't actually have the paper here, there were 32 votes for the proposition, 18 votes for nay, and 8 Alliance voters.
And now we move on to the rules. So each speech is 7 minutes long. The first and last minute are protected time, which will be signalled by the bell up there, meaning that you can only POI people in the middle 5 minutes. To POI, raise your hand and say point of information on that point or POI. Please keep your POI to 10 seconds long and no barracking, meaning wait at least 15 seconds after giving a POI to give another one. And lastly, no swearing or Jacqueline's going to come get you and ask you for a bottle of port. And with that, I'd like to invite Ryan Hoey, HLM, up to open the proposition.
I'll wait for you to start the timer. Right. Thank you, Madam President. It's a pleasure to be speaking in the first debate of the 175th session, particularly on a topic that's so incredibly important and has the potential to transform all of our lives. It's perhaps best to start by outlining what the proposition is arguing in tonight's debate, or more importantly, what it is not. We on the proposition are not arguing that AI doesn't offer some potentially huge benefits, or indeed that we shouldn't use or embrace it. Rather, we're approaching this motion as it is intended and exploring the topic more philosophically than the usual AI good, AI bad debate. Let's begin with some definitions to properly set the scope for this debate. First, humanity, the condition of being human or the sense of what it our sense of what it means to be human. Second, undermine. According to the Collins English Dictionary, if you undermine something such as a feeling, you make it less strong or less secure than it was before, often by a gradual process or by repeated efforts. So what you're being asked to consider tonight is whether AI is gradually making less strong or less secure our sense of what it means to be human. There are, of course, many aspects of what it means to be human. Rationality, our ability to engage in complex reasoning and problem solving. Communication, our ability to convey abstract ideas or share knowledge. Creativity expressed through art, music and literature, innovation, developing new technology and scientific advancements, and much more besides. It's my contention, and that of the proposition, that AI is undermining, or has the potential to undermine, a whole range of these aspects of our humanity. However, I'd like to focus my speech on the first of these attributes, rationality. Some of you may know that the motto of this society is the Latin motto, sapere aude, which means dare to know. This motto was popularised by the German philosopher Immanuel Kant and was seen as something as a rallying cry for the Enlightenment. Another motto I'd like to bring to your attention, also popularised by a German, is wir müssen wissen, wir werden wissen, which means we must know, we shall know. Now, you may be wondering why I'm quoting two thinkers from the pre-technological age in a debate about artificial intelligence. But to get to the heart of this debate, I think we need to go back to first principles and consider some classical philosophical ideas of what it means to be human. And what both mottos convey is a belief in human knowledge and rationality, and our ability to independently answer the most important questions of our age. David Hilbert, who popularised the motto "Wir müssen wissen, wir werden wissen," also proposed the Entscheidungs problem, which asks whether there exists a general algorithm that can determine the truth or falsehood of any mathematical statement. In his 1936 paper on computable numbers, Alan Turing constructed a mathematical problem that cannot be solved algorithmically, answering the Entscheidungs problem with the conclusion that there is no universal algorithm for solving all mathematical problems. In introducing the Turing machine as a theoretical model of computation, Turing laid the groundwork for modern electronic computing. However, he also unintentionally undermined our sense of what it means to be human from the point of view of rationality, and inadvertently replaced Hilbert's motto of "we must know, we shall know" with the rather less inspiring "we can't know and we won't." In his later paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence, Turing proposed a thought experiment known as the imitation game, which later became known as the Turing test. In this test, a human judge engages in a conversation with both a human and a machine without knowing which is which. If the judge cannot reliably distinguish between the human and the machine based on the responses, then the machine is said to have passed the Turing test and exhibited human-like intelligence. This test is clearly being passed by artificial intelligence today. Therefore, it's worth asking how humans participating in such an experiment today would be different to those participating in the imitation game in the 1950s. If human beings and machines are interchangeable, and machines are now demonstrating attributes we once thought unique to human beings, we must surely accept that they are making less strong or less secure our sense of what it means to be human. If we once thought rationality was an attribute unique to human beings, what do we say when AI has the capacity to engage in complex reasoning and problem solving?
On that point?
No, thank you. If our humanity was once demonstrated for our creative expression, how do we value human-created art, music, and literature when AI can generate seemingly unique pieces of art, human-like singing voices, poetry, or fictional novels? What happens to our belief in humanity's unique ability to strive towards new heights of knowledge and understanding when it is our machines making all of the new technological developments or scientific advancements? It seems to me that as we make these great technological strides in the field of artificial intelligence, we risk going from Hilbert's motto of "Wir müssen wissen, wir werden wissen," we must know, we shall know, to "Es müssen wissen, es werden wissen," it must know, it shall know. In his paper on the imitation game, Turing wrote, "I believe that at the end of the century, the use of words and general educated opinion will have altered so much that one will be able to speak of machines thinking without expecting to be contradicted." In some ways, this is a commentary on ourselves as much as it is on our machines. If we lose the capacity to distinguish ourselves and one another from machines, then in some sense it is we who have failed the test rather than our machines that have passed it. If the attributes we associate with the condition of being human, or the sense of what it means to be human, can now be emulated by machines, then maybe it's time to reevaluate the meaning of the human condition. But by voting with the proposition tonight, you are saying that we have so far failed to grapple with this test, and in failing to do so, we have allowed AI to gradually undermine our sense of what it means to be human. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.
Brilliant for a speech, and I'd like to invite Megan Hewitt up to open the opposition.
I'd first like to start with just saying a wee bit about your speech. First of all, the test, I think, with what we know now about technology could just be outdated. And everything that you have said that technology is able to do now that mimics humans, it's because we made it. We have allowed it to do so, and therefore we are above. So I will get into my speech. Good evening to all members of the House. I can safely say it is great to be back at the Society for another interesting year. And I cannot wait to see what it has to offer. And I am glad to be participating in the first debate of this 175th session. And what a great motion at that. Artificial intelligence. It's been around for ages, but recently has become everyone's favourite buzzword, with the rise of AI art and ChatGPT doing anything from helping with essays to writing screenplays to telling impressionable youth how to build a bomb. Some currently see it as a bit of fun, some see it as a helpful tool, and some are so scared of it that they say thank you to their Alexas to avoid being murdered by it when it turns sentient. I will first briefly look at the current state of AI, then predictions for the future, tinfoil hat sold separately, and then I will get into my main argument. For those of you that don't know, I am a drama student. Clap, please, I need attention. Thank you very much. And I am also big into art in general. Can't resign from a degree. I mean, I could, but that's a lot of money. And I am also big into art in general. This means that AI has been on my radar for quite a while now, and it's hilarious. I constantly see people on the internet and in real life telling me that AI is going to steal all of our jibs. They're taking our jibs. They're taking our jobs, apparently, according to everybody. First it was the immigrants, and now it's the robots. People are really weird. First, AI plagiarizing from thousands of artists, and what have I wrote there? And still giving the anime girl I asked it to make maybe half rendered eye and two fingers. Nothing's perfect yet. Then Mickey Mouse and all of his clubhouse friends, the SAG after strikes, threatening that they're going to use it to write scripts instead of buying my screenplay, since even though I can't even read what I've written. Even though what it produces is repetitive, washed out garbage, somewhere between 13-year-old Harry Potter fan fiction and a kid's show from the 70s. Yeah.
Doesn't that just
Yes. But if they paid them more, maybe they'd work harder. SAG after the strike, so. Who was it? No. To be honest, that might still be better than She-Hulk, though, so fair enough. And if you want a good example of what AI art produces, just ask James Orchin, HLM, about the unofficial literific fanfiction. That's the standard of AI now. It plagiarizes from the internet and then vomits it out. But it does learn. Yes?
For everyone's sake, don't ask James about the AI.
It's all on... Just buy him a drink. The big worry is that AI will undermine us by being able to do what we do. If this computer can do exactly what I do, then what am I? You are human. Never forget it. Even though AI is constantly learning and evolving, it's still a big jumble of zeros and ones. It can replicate human learning on a surface level, but the passion behind what we create is so valuable, and AI can't recreate passion.
On that point, you say that AI isn't passionate. There is a thing known as I forget what it is now, but basically when AI asserts something that is incredibly wrong, but does it in an extremely forceful way, it shows passion, even if it isn't.
Because we made it do that. We put the zeros and ones in a certain order, and it made that happen. Because we did that, not AI.
Barracking.
To say that AI undermines our humanity overlooks what it truly is to be human. It's passion, creativity, relationships between us. It's emotion and feeling and the ability to touch grass. It's not what we create, but the reasoning as to why we create.
Do animals undermine humanity because they breathe like we do? No. Does a monkey make me question my existence because it has opposable thumbs like me? No. Nah. If you question your existence, you need to touch grass. So why would we give AI the power to undermine us by thinking this way, even though we can do so much more than what we've created? Maybe our own mindset is the issue. The only thing that can and does undermine us is ourselves. The way we give this technology far more credit than it deserves undermines us. The people that take AI and use it as a direct replacement for human creativity and intelligence, they are the ones who undermine us. No, thank you. AI is just technology. It can't hurt you or steal your jobs. It's whoever decided to use it for that purpose that is to blame.
On that point?
No. Go away. Leave me alone. The people in charge were really the bad guys all along, guys. Hollywood. Instead, we need to see AI as a tool. The same way we see Excel or PowerPoint, but, you know, far, 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 far more advanced. A good way I have found to use it is basically a glorified search engine to help me find articles and references or to give me inspiration to create something of my own. Instead of taking it, saying, that'll do, pig, then hitting Control-C, printing and attempting to pass this amalgamation of other people's work off as my own. Notice how AI did the exact same thing in this scenario. The issue was what I did with it when it was produced. Humanity is such an incredible, rare, and weird thing. There are many reasons why it is what it is. The one thing is for sure, there is and will be nothing like it. AI, therefore, does not undermine it. The only thing that undermines our humanity are other people, more specifically, and that is that word redacted. Thank you.
Clarify what Barragan is. Wait 15 seconds between PLI's, please. And I'd like to welcome a maiden speaker, Aisling Quigley, up to give a speech. I would like to focus on art and AI and what you said about art being made by humans with passion and emotion, and exactly that's why AI art undermines real art. The term artificial intelligence implies that a machine has the same capabilities as humans, able to engage in problem solving rather than simply performing automated tasks, independent of human input. Furthermore, to be capable of independent reasoning, it implies the ability to be able to take information and create something new, such as art. While the debate surrounding AI art, whether it can be considered real art, has been around for the last decade, it is only in recent years where AI art has become sophisticated enough for us to consider how we define it. Before this, AI art was frankly terrible. The skill was in no way comparable. It was unable to get proportions right. Most people had 10 fingers in each hand. However, the recent controversy of an AI-generated artwork winning a fine art competition makes it necessary for us to consider how we value art, if not solely by skill, and more importantly, why we as humans even make art to begin with. While art is appreciated for its beauty, it is its ability to portray a worldview or evoke emotions to drive us to create art. Art is a reflection of the human experience, an expression of thoughts and feelings that is used to resonate with other people and build community. It is the foundation of every culture and society. Art is a proof of existence from the handprints and caves dating back to the Stone Age. It is a statement claiming, I was here, I existed, I mattered. Art is meant to inspire and feed into a creative stream from which other artists take inspiration and create new original works, building an artistic and literary canon. However, AI not only stagnates this process of creativity, but is a parasite that feeds off of other artists' creations. It is unable to add anything new, instead taking works created by other people and reproducing them. AI has already impacted creators whose art has been fed to AI in order to train it, plagiarizing their intellectual property without any compensation. The growing sophistication of AI technology and its capability to reproduce pieces of art or writing is developing at a speed which we are simply not equipped for. Already, the writer's strike in America is campaigning for legislation to stop AI being used by the film industry to rewrite parts or even entire scripts. Artists are removing their online portfolios in the fear their works will be used to further AI. In an age of mass consumption, where Netflix originals are churned out and forgotten in the span of a week, we simply cannot compete with the rate of production AI is capable of achieving. This places us at risk of losing human expression in the media altogether, with art shifting from a form of expression to a mark of capital, removed from humanity altogether and becoming simply a means of profit. AI now poses worrying questions, not just on the right to intellectual property in a technological age, but the rights to bodily autonomy. The New York Times reported that a recent Netflix contract reserved the rights to free use of simulations of a voice actor's voice by all technologies and processes now known or hereafter developed. During filming for Marvel's TV show WandaVision, extras had full body scans by cameras to capture their likeness. In a process that took only 15 minutes to complete, digital replicas were taken of them without informing what they would be used for. The industry's move to replace extras and voice actors with AI foreshadows a dystopian future, where in the film industry, actors' likenesses will become a commodity to be bought and sold. If AI art involves separating people from their very selves, can it even be considered art when it is completely void of any self-expression, alienating people from their own bodies, their own voices, their own words? The very thing art is meant to connect us to. How are we to engage with and relate to an art form where the experiences of being human is marginalised in favour of profit? This also raises ethical concerns in how these body scans will be used. If actors' voices and bodies can be used by the media in any project they choose, it means their likeness can be used in works they do not morally agree with to further an agenda they're against. If extras are signing contracts to give full usage of their likeness, does this remove their ability to folk consent of their voice or body being used in sexually explicit works? Stephen Fry spoke out about his voice being taken from his audio recording of the Harry Potter series and used by AI to narrate a documentary, saying, "It could have me read anything, from a call to storm Parliament to hard porn, all without my knowledge and without my permission. And this was done without my knowledge." Not only is this a risk faced by actors, but by politicians too. In an age of misinformation and fake news, the technology of deepfakes and image AI will completely change our ability of being able to use images as primary sources. The AI-generated image of Donald Trump being arrested by a horde of policemen that circulated on Twitter a few months back shows how AI is becoming more public in the mainstream media to manipulate public opinion. As AI becomes more lifelike and can depict anyone doing anything, how are we even supposed to trust our own eyes in deciding what is real or not? Furthermore, this exposes AI's biggest weakness, a lack of intention. In recreating art and literature from a myriad of sources, it is completely unable to criticise bigotry that exists within these works, instead regurgitating and enforcing them. If creative industries are taken over by AI, we will lose the perspectives of minority groups and work that challenge the status quo. If art is a reflection of society itself, if AI art becomes the dominant mode of expression, our society will become just as stagnant as it is unable to expand upon and come up with new ideas, completely removed from forms of discourse and expression. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you, and this will be amazing. I wish to first, thank the proposition for their opening speech, as they took the words right out of our mouth. The first thing we must do in this debate is define what is humanity and what is artificial intelligence. Well, artificial intelligence is fairly simple to understand. It's a computer-generated construct, and while I appreciate the fact that Mr. Hoey was able to define humanity, would you believe it? He actually only gave you half of the full definition. Realistically, the actual full definition is that humanity is generally based around kindness and compassion, according to the Oxford English Dictionary. And that is really the crux of the argument. Humanity is based around emotion, which, due to Isaac Asimov's law of robotics and creation of constructs, proposition failed to mention, AI and computer-generated constructs cannot believably recreate human emotion in a proper capacity. And as a result, we can see the clear difference between humanity and artificial intelligence.
On that point?
If you were to, say, take a piece of information, you realistically, you've all seen AI artwork. It's a bit tragic, isn't it? Like, you've seen all the posts and all that jazz, and also the scarily interesting and dystopian Dwayne the Rock Johnson one, Rock, Paper, Scissors. Or, better yet, if you're into literific knowledge, James Auchin's alternate history stories. Realistically, humanity is a notoriously vague concept that is hard to define outside of these parameters. It's why the proposition is able to say that the majority of human artwork is based around the emotions and emphasis. But realistically, if we were to define the entirety of humanity around the artwork we produced and the work we left behind, that is, to my mind, solely putting the entire emphasis of human existence behind work is a bit of a dystopian Jeff Bezos yeah. And so, realistically, AI, like, I could do a cool joke here and get AI to write an argument. So I did. And I limited it to 100 words, and let's see if you can tell that between some of the arguments that we made here and whether we did. I'll stall for time while he brings it up. But realistically, oh, here we go. From ChatGPT itself. Ladies and gentlemen, AI ain't a big deal. It's just some fancy machines and stuff. Humanity's been around for ages, and AI won't change that. We'll be fine. Thanks. As you can see, nothing to worry about at all. In a moment. But realistically, that is equally leads on to a very good point. By the invention of the automobile, did we lose humanity by riding on horseback and stop losing that? No, but yes.
Isn't the idea that it doesn't undermine our humanity exactly what it wants you to think? It's also that it's not going to undermine our humanity, so it can.
Well, I would say that AI is not Skynet, so realistically, yeah. We should not limit ourselves to the fantasies of John Connor fighting the resistance. AI is solely limited to what the creation of its AI, well, what its creators puts into it. AI can only derive from existing formulas. I will answer that in just 1 minute, but I just want to finish this. If you look at AI artwork, it simply derives from pre-existing artwork pieces. It cannot create brand new concepts that exist, whereas that is the key component of humanity. It has creativity. I will first go to him and then get
you. You mentioned that AI is limited to what's created as input, but I think I read a few years ago that Facebook developed a language learning model to break down language into smaller forms with an AI. But the AI figured out a shorter way to talk to itself with the language, and they had to shut it down because they couldn't even understand what it was saying.
Well, I would say that actually, while that sounds dystopian and proving the proposition's point, I would say that that is derived from pre-existing human language. It takes the pre-existing concept, breaks it down into chunks that, while we can't comprehend, are based in actual deep scientific facts that already pre-exist, and then utilize that to create a concept that is perceived to be new, but is actually new. Well, which one is desperate?
Both.
We'll go for you.
So, hypothetically, if something takes elements of something and breaks the elements down and then creates something different out of it, it's still part of those elements. So, hypothetically, AI made out of, you know, natural things. It's developed out of natural things. It was made by the things around us. It's not entirely unnatural. It's made by us. Would you say that AI is entirely natural?
Well, I don't believe that's the point of the argument. AI, the definition is not whether it's inherently natural. It's about whether it undermines humanity as a core concept. And humanity as a core concept, as I previously stated, is based around core emotions, and not whether it is natural or not. Realistically, humanity is based around... humanity is not based around what is natural. Otherwise, we would say that the entirety of the existence of cities is unnatural because it is not existing in nature. And by that definition, a lot of human society can be deemed to undermine humanity if you follow that train of logic, to my mind. And to get back onto the point that I was saying before I took the points of information, for all of AI's speed and ability to do things in like record quick time and seemingly undermine the value of an artist, realistically, if you look at an art piece, emotion is derived from the viewer. For all the artist's intentions behind creating an artwork, whatever Vincent van Gogh's was behind the sunflower, or whenever he decided to chop his ear off, realistically, whenever you take 100 people and you get them to view that picture, 100 people will have 100 unique positions. And is that end? But you get 100 unique viewpoints. And that's the same with AI artwork. You get 100 people to review an AI artwork, and that is the same. But the crux of the argument, as I said, is that humanity is based around emotions which AI cannot replicate.
If I were to read a book a week for my entire lifetime, I would have read a few thousand books. In most libraries, that is a fraction of the books it holds. And of course, a library contains a fraction of the total number of books ever written. Things such as ChatGPT know thousands times more than any human in basic common sense or, you know, information. But it only has about a trillion connection strengths in the artificial neural nets. And we have about 100 trillion connection strengths in the brain. So with 100 as much storage capacity, it knows thousands of times more than us. And that strongly suggests, well, it has a better way of getting information in the connections. The brain does not use as good a learning algorithm as these digital learning intelligences. And it isn't as good because brains can't exchange information fast enough. And these digital intelligences can. These intelligences can communicate at trillions of bits a second, and we can communicate at hundreds of bits a second by sentences. It is a huge difference, and that's why ChatGPT can learn thousands of times more information than you can. How does this look in...
Are you talking to your libraries after this?
Oh, come on. Relax. It's a little bit of fun. How does this look in practice with human agency interacting with AI? In 1977, Bobby Fischer beat a computer in a game of chess. AI was far less developed than today. Fischer was, for those of you not familiar, the first American world champion in decades. Kind of going on a bit of a tangent about chess here. And it was sort of an ideological battle between the lone American, kind of strange guy, Fischer, versus this chess machine. And he was able to beat them, but even he today would not be able to compete with the current chess players. And the current champion, Magnus Carlsen, he stands out because he can memorize nearly every game of chess that has ever actually happened. But machine learning is so great today that the world's best chess player, Magnus Carlsen, does not possess the ability to actually beat the modern chess computers. Sure, yeah, go for it.
Would you not say, though, that humanity is far more than just our intelligence, or do you really think that us as an entire race is just defined by how much we know?
Well, when the machines can learn so much more, it kind of does undermine it, you know? And I sort of go on in the speech about this. What I really was saying was artificial intelligence possesses today a greater ingenuity and ability to learn than anyone on this planet, including you.
You're part of my gal.
Okay. Let's look at prehistory, another tangent. For hundreds of thousands of years, there was one design of axe. You've probably seen it in most museums, the Archelian axe. It was complex to produce and required persistence to make. It is the longest used tool in human history, used for roughly 1.5 million years until about 100,000 years ago. What changed? Why did we stop using it? Well, modern linguistics emerged it's a debate, but some people say 100,000, some people say 150,000 years ago, and new tools and complex societies were established because of this. And it took us 100,000 years from whenever that was, we're not entirely sure, to get where we are today, where we're all slaves to technology and the rest of it. And I would like to remind you that if I had to read a book a day, not a book a day, a book a week, until I died, it would be 3,500. And I also have the issue of, well, some of them might be a bit rubbish or a bit pointless. AI does not have this problem. It can easily digest information in a way never seen before in history. With its enormous amount of knowledge, the human element of being able to think organically is replaced with a machine that can imagine every scenario because it has learnt and analysed every scenario. Okay, I was about four people at once. It is entirely possible that humanity could just be a passing phase in the evolution of intelligence. Now, I don't think that AI will produce Terminator, much rather a perfectly predictable, boring dystopia like the one that we currently live in. This is, of course, a sort of existential threat. Sure, go for it.
You've been saying a lot about information gathering and tool making, but is that solely what humanity is about, tool making and information gathering?
Well, if it wasn't for it, we'd all be, you know, running around in grass skirts and, you know.
That's such a good politician.
And some of you may be persuaded by arguments such as AI could replace jobs that are not wanted, freeing those who worked them. Well, if we lived in a just society, this might be the case. Sadly, we do not. The companies invested in AI, which includes most of the top technology companies, Apple, Meta, Google, you all know them, you know. Sure, go for it.
You're the last speaker on that side. I think you ought to engage with what these folks have said rather than go off on some tangent about technology. They've talked about humanity, art, and things like that. I'd advise you to engage with their argument, otherwise they've kind of undermined yours. I know you've done this before, you see.
It's been a long day, Daniel. Well, really, but, you know, even if you look at a lot of the stuff they're saying, the inevitability is that people aren't into AI for philanthropy. I don't really think it's about bettering us or improving our humanity. If you're naive enough to trust the large corporations, you know, and I think that the dark path we will go down is that the rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer. And that's not necessarily AI's fault. That's how we organize society. But the way our society is encourages this to happen. And it is ridiculous to suggest that AI could somehow facilitate humanity better to do so. Thank you.
Vincent Lawler, HLM, to give his maiden speech. Ein Moment bitte. So, meine Präsidentin, ehrenhafte Vlad, Mitglieder und Mitgliederinnen. Ich muss sagen, dein pronunciation of German is absolutely shite. Es ist wir mit einem V. Wir müssen wissen, wir müssen bewerben. Und es ist nicht, wir sollen. Es ist ein Problem mit Ihrer Übersetzung. So, my president, honorable council, which is apparently not so honorable, members old and new of this 175th session of the Literific. I'm Fintan Lawler, and more commonly known this side of the border as Paddington Bear. I have been afforded the opportunity to give the learned position today on the motion before this House. My argument seeks to build on data that was given by my colleagues while adding my own experience of working in AI. AI, like the atomic bomb and fire before that, will make a Prometheus of those that come to harness such technology. I put it to you, however, that it is not the threat the proposition will lead you to believe. Indeed, our artificial intelligence exists, but there is no match for natural stupidity. AI has indeed great power to do any number of things, but that is exactly it. Things, individual things. Our final speaker for the proposition put forth a pseudo-fictitious, argument about this somewhat non-existent general artificial intelligence. There are models that do singular things. You cannot, as I stress this, you really cannot get AI to do more than one thing. So I tried desperately. I tried to get an AI model with some really nice GPUs to... Yes? Unfortunately, there's a limit to how far technology can go and how much money a BT Young Scientist competitor has to spend on compute time. I could get this AI model to either translate semi-accurately between English and Irish, or Irish and English, but I could not, for the life of me, get it to be able to actually compute the initial mutations, such as Shaver and the Uru. It is simply hell-like to sit in front of your computer for years trying to think, how can I get this model to do both things? You simply cannot get it to do it. So there is no such issue where it undermines our humanity, because we are able to multitask. It's not like when our final speaker also pointed out that AI somehow knows more than women. because women evidently know more. It is famously said that only women can multitask, which already gives them the upper hand over any AI model. So, if we're able to, it comes back to a further motion that we'll have later on in the year, that this house believes that the British Empire is more good than harm. We can play cricket and we can drink tea, the AI can't. So therefore we are human. It is a matter of enhancing or diminishing. It is all a matter of perspective. AI is a tool and not much more. A hammer can be used as a hammer, but you really struggle to use it as a screwdriver. It's a unique tool that indeed has unique applications, depending on what the computer scientist or software engineer spent time doing.
On that one?
Yes.
Would you say that guns don't kill people?
But this is the thing. Sorry. No, you're. This is the thing. AI won't kill anybody. It is a matter of implementation. There is a key issue here that relies on us sitting down and saying that AI, we're going to let AI actually run a system and suggest that system comprises of one task. What we've actually done is we've made a really good system from baking cakes. We've made a machine that can make the best cakes in the world, that can look at all the great bakers in the world and say that is a cake that is an amalgamation, some hell-like offspring of a cake, but it's damn good. Like this art piece that won a fine art competition. It is just amalgamated. It's not created anything new. Our ability to multitask and our ability for originality, to go a step beyond simply amalgamating what we've learned before, allows for...
On that point, all human beings are not an amalgamation of everything.
Yes, we are.
And we don't actually create anything new.
Yes, no, allow me to address that. So this is where data becomes the issue. So we were discussing our wonderful concept of a book a week or a book a day. He wasn't quite certain. this is where the multitasking also comes into it. We have the ability to comprehend multiple different concepts to combine them. If we consider, now this is where this is where engineering starts. if we consider, say, a Spitfire, we could look at the previous planes that have done before, that have all existed. Some monoplanes, some biplanes, some made with steel frames, some made with canvas, and some with canvas airfoil, some with aluminium airfoil. It all becomes a semi... AI would put out some sort of biplane similar to the Gloster Gladiator. Nothing new, kind of boring. However, if we get an engineer who has looked at a bird, I'm not sure what bird. Imagine a bird in your head, guys. They're really interesting things. we'll soon see that a bird has a unique opportunity to do X, Y, or Z, and therefore can implement it. We have the ability to observe. So, I'm going to go over time. Is that all right? No. No? No? Okay. One minute. So it's not so much that we're looking at that software engineer sitting around thinking, now I am become deaf, the destroyer of worlds. No, it's not nearly like that, because we're far more giddy about what we've done and the fact that tomorrow we're going to go and look at how to make cheese better using AI. But we know full well that it's much like a Tamagotchi, it's just going to keep on asking for more data. But we've got the ability to go and find new data passively. It doesn't matter where we find it, peripheral vision, it's cool. Over time, we'll have more and more data that allows us to extrapolate multiple different things and then produce not just a really good cake that is made from considering Mary Berry and her arthritic hands.
Come here, I can actually try.
Sorry, Mary Berry and her arthritic hands, we can actually go and make a totally new cake that could be, I don't know, I'm thinking of a really cool new cake here, a cheesecake and an opera cake, and it's really cool, you know, because we've generated from an additional source that the data that we're giving it simply don't understand. Thank you.
Second round of applause for a brilliant room. And Jacqueline, take notes because he owes the House of Olafort. And now we move on to questions. So if anybody has any questions for the proposition, please raise your hand now. Yes, please. Please state your name for the minutes.
So, forgive my ignorance about computer science. But all the information, all the art that has to be fed into it for it to be able to result and develop the new things has to be directed by the person behind the screen. So the programmer or the executive has to make a decision to scan the artists, to scan the actors, to feed in all the great artists. So wouldn't you agree that it's not a program or a tool being used to undermine our humanity, but it's the person behind, it's the human who's wielding the tool is actually doing that effort of undermining.
Could one of you please respond?
Well, under our circumstances, unfortunately, our system necessitates that people do those things, and AI is being used to facilitate that. Therefore, undermining humanity. There you go.
And does anyone have any questions for the...
They have to respond.
You don't understand what we're saying in the first place, is that it's not the thing that we made. It's we did it in the first place. It's us, and then this is just the vessel in which we put this information.
There's nothing new.
But you can't have two.
Yeah.
As I said, wonderful cake.
It's more of a compilation.
Just for clarification on questions, only one person from each side can respond. Any questions from the opposition?
Yes. Okay, technically you. But you're speaking about how AI isn't really convincing when it comes to things like emotions, because you sort of surrender the half of humanity definition of rationality that would be undermined. The emotion part you saw is core. But yet, you seem to completely not realise that in March of this year, there was a man who was, by an AI chatbot, convinced to commit suicide. So, through the accelerated rise of AI, how amazing, it was in Belgium before you even try and say it was wrong. But this amazing rise that it has, could you not see that in the future, it is a race against humanity and AI. It is conquer or be conquered. There is no surrender. Find a way or die. So would you happily usher in the death camps that will kill us all? Or that will simply have us as servitor slaves to our AI worlds? Us all. Another man, our good lord. See you here.
Yes, please do.
Well, first off, I want to say condolences to the poor person involved with that. That's a tragic incident. But I would say that the thing is that while it can replicate emotions, as the answer to the previous question, that is a collation of human input AI is created by humanity. It can only replicate as well as the human can create it, and cannot realistically be said to be a sentient body. That was what my speech was intending to infer, that it does not have sentience and it cannot actually feel this emotion, it can only replicate it. So
it doesn't matter if it is replicated.
No, back and forth.
So realistically, the point that the opposition was trying to get across was that humanity is based on more than just sort of the work that is produced or comes across on text message. It is about interpretation. It's about the human mentality and the ability to think and feel, which isn't necessarily expressed through text. That realistically, the meaning behind that was inferred through the human mentality of that being perceived as emotion.
Proposition to respond.
I think we're in the risk of the opposition trying to play a bit of a trick on us here, because it's kind of like if we had a motion saying this house believes nuclear weapons threaten humanity, and they were like, but actually, unless we press the button, then nuclear weapons don't threaten humanity. Well, even if AI doesn't get to the point where it doesn't need some sort of human input into it, it can still threaten, it still doesn't mean it can't threaten our humanity because there is some human input into it. It doesn't obfuscate the point about that it now can replicate humans in its outputs. Like the person who sadly took their own life, the outcome's still the same, whether there was a slight human input that got them to that point. You know, the outcome's still the same. So it's a slight trick that the opposition are trying to play with the motion, I contend.
Are there any abstaining questions? I'll go to...
What usually happens in Fosse is like that the AI has been given a task and therefore has interpreted it in a certain way that could be a bit darker than what humans would. Like, as in, like, maybe some of the best parts of humanity is like, yeah, we're like to save the environment, kill humans. I don't know where you know, really. But like even our legislators can't write laws without making loopholes in them, so how are we expected to make rules for AIs for them to follow?
Proposition to respond first.
I agree. It's one of those abstention questions that's very nicely put towards the proposition side. So my response is I agree.
Opposition, have fun.
Well, the way it currently exists in artificial intelligence is that there's, as I said, created by science fiction writer Isaac Asimov, is Isaac Asimov's War of Robotics, which generally would be applied to the creation of AI, which is, does not harm human beings. You can look up the rest of it for your votes and for your own personal information. It's always good to learn. But normally, AI is programmed with ethics devised by... that's not necessarily undermining humanity, but it's programmed by the creator. And realistically, normally it is programmed with limitations to prevent that sort of thing from occurring.
I think we should actually have two responses from the opposition on this one. See if they've got a slightly different take.
Asimov's law of robotics. This is what the philosophers are currently sitting there debating whether or not Asimov's law of robotics actually applies to AI, because it isn't a physical robot. The fundamental issue that we rely on is that yes, there are some rather dark Occam's razor sort of solutions, such as the best way to stop climate change is to get rid of humans. Whether we like it or not, we're causing it. Therefore, getting rid of us is a solution. Not the solution, a solution. If we are to compare these to a summer say or something like that, it relies on ethics don't apply here. We merely just need to to build the tool. It's not ethical to design a gun, but I know plenty of engineers that work in Lockheed Martin. For example.
We have time for one more round of questions.
Okay.
We do. We have 20 minutes. So, are there questions for the proposition?
Yes. So, there was a point on 15 issues of the writer's strikes and kind of Hollywood and who does all the writing and whatever.
Right.
Okay. What I don't get is, is that the entirety of her point seems to be that, okay, it's doing it in terms of its better creating stuff, it might create commercial success, that it takes away the emotion from film. Okay, does that not just suggest that our writers, the human ones, are just getting shit, and the AI ones are just more entertaining?
It's not that it's more entertaining, it's a mass production, it's better than a theater. When it comes to paying labor, you don't need to pay a theater. It's an easy way to cut the cost. But staring at that, you can have them writing the entire script. It's to write the draft, so you don't have to pay as many hours for the writer to fix it up. But when AI becomes more sophisticated, that will most likely be more writers left out of the room.
Opposition to respond?
Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It just all depends on who you hire as well. Like, for example, Disney, will we see what happened to Star Wars, rest in peace, good Star Wars. Marvel, rest in peace, good Marvel. Not all writers are bad. For example, if you hired me to make the rest of the Star Wars and Marvel movies, it would continue to be the best franchise of all time. But unfortunately, I'm doing a drama degree at the moment, so I can't. So apologies for that.
Are there any questions for the opposition? I'll go, Eleanor. State your name for the minutes, please.
Thank you. Which is, he kind of, there's already a misunderstanding of how AI works in this episode. He said AI can't multitask. And I'm under the impression that AI very much can multitask. Like, it goes through so much information, it combs through, like, billions of bits of information all at the same time. Now, if anyone can correct me,
Unfortunately, that is how AI works. This is where we get into like, the fundamentals of how AI is generated. So what we do is first is you get a data set, and then that's combed through manually by a human, and then we say, okay, this is what everything that goes into something, say flour, eggs, butter, milk, and sugar. It's not a vegetarian cake, so it's sugar. And then here's the cake. The computer does not know how to make the cake. So all we're doing is that here's lots of sugar, and here's lots of eggs, and here's lots, and now we have different eggs, and duck's eggs, and ostrich eggs, and whatever. And over time, they say, okay, eventually we will plot out something that looks like a cake. And then what we'll then say, like ChatGPT, is that we just put in a garbage of words, and we'll say, okay, this is vaguely something that would look like what it's supposed to come up with. So it's not, it's really just hodgepodge. Fundamentally, it's not dope, it's not just guessing what comes next, and that's all AI does. It's just,
oh no, yeah. Back and forth, sorry.
Yeah, it's just a guess. It's a really good guess sometimes.
Proposition to respond?
Just say yes.
Thanks. I'm an English student. I can't tell you the specifics of how it works. I didn't do engineering, I would leave that up to him.
Are there any abstaining questions? I'll go to you. Please state your name for the minutes.
Jonathan, how are you? I really got that much spelling. I'm not spelling.
Yeah, just more generally, I've heard quite a lot of people from the very general conceptions of humanity, and there is some variance on it. Is humanity by necessity undermined by potential personhood of another entity? Which, what aliens apparently even came that it wasn't the same again. Same aliens. And that hasn't seen the impact of our conception of those to be in the long term, those things.
Opposition first, please.
I think that humanity is a very individual thing. Whether we have animals or aliens or anything else that is alive, if they have a personhood, I feel like that they would define that, and we would define that as something very different. Whenever any of us talk about humanity, I believe that we're all talking about the same thing, which is human beings. And that's not going to change no matter how many other types of beings and prop up over the years. I think humanity will be humanity no matter what.
Proposition.
Just say your ghost. AI has personhood, I don't think it does. I'm not saying that it's undermining it because it is more skillful. I'm saying the way that AI is going to be used is going to push people out of creative industries because it's just cheaper.
Just put them into engineering, there'll be more useful there.
And now we move on to our vote on speaker ability. Now, this is not what side you agree with, it's who you think spoke best tonight. So if you think that the proposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hands now.
One? This is boosted my ego here.
10 I got? 10? Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
me sympathetic.
And if you think the opposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hand now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Never coming back again.
We're getting another bottle of wine.
And if you would like to abstain, you don't think anyone spoke well tonight, please raise your hand.
What do you call both?
That's the correct answer.
Rob, Shen disappointed, didn't you?
I just got 4. 5.
Yeah.
5.
5.
Could we please have the vote on speaker ability?
No. Okay. There were 9 votes for the proposition, 34 votes for the opposition, 5 alliance voters, so by about a West Belfast margin.
Well done to the opposition, and we are all going to Lavery's now, so please do join us.
Picture.
Oh yeah, also speakers, photo, speakers.